Michelle, first things first, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm excited. The new album, Morgoth Tales, is coming out tomorrow. So, yeah, it's always a lot of work, and I received the copies and looks great.
Is there still some nervousness and anxiety, or is it, can you let it go now?
Oh, I'm pretty nervous because most people will get their copies tomorrow, and I can't wait to see what people think about it, really.
Well, yeah, we can only wait and find out. Let's before we delve really into the new album, I'd like to jump back to the beginning a little bit because the band is celebrating its 40th anniversary, I believe. Now, when you started 40 years ago, what was the mindset within the band? What was the dream, so to say?
Well, the dream was to really become an international band, even though we were French Canadian from Northern Quebec. It seemed like an impossible dream, really, to me anyway, until Warren Payne came out in '84. That's where I decided to quit university to try to make it as a musician, and because the album Warren Payne had a pretty good impact on what was going to become thrash metal.
Sure. Very quickly, at that time, were you studying graphical design at that point?
No, I was studying science,
Okay.
but I did go back to school in the 90s and the years 2000 to in the graphic design, digital graphic design. I went back to school three times, actually.
Okay, no, because that's what I find interesting, kind of the balance between those creative expressions. You have music on the one end, and then you have the more visual side on the other. How do you do they go together for in your mind, or are they separate worlds?
They always, to me, they were always related. When I was a teenager, I did a lot of drawings, listening to progressive rock albums, watching the front cover, and from the bands like Yes or Emerson, Lake and Palmer, like Tarkus, and it was always connected. But I was lucky because, I mean, I created the Voivod concept when I discovered the magazine Heavy Metal comics,
Okay.
and I wanted to be an artist for Heavy Metal magazine, so I created the Voivod world for my art in the 70s and early 80s. But when Snake joined the band in January 83, we started looking for a name. I mentioned Voivod and the guys were intrigued. And then they first asked me, how do you spell it? And then they asked me what it was all about. When I explained the concept, we all got excited and developed it visually, musically, lyrically, all through the 80s, over five albums. So it was a great adventure. So all through that, I was doing the art for the band to express visually what was happening in the music and lyrics, and so it was always intertwined. And these days, I draw a lot while recording and mixing, and
Okay.
I use the drawings in the booklets. And yeah, it's a great adventure for me, for sure.
No, and that's excellent to well, like you say, you've did all the artwork over the years, and it's really cool to see the development of that initial Voivod kind of idea over the years. It's expanded and gone in different directions. So it's really cool to see.
Yeah, it's also a great opportunity for me on tour. After every show, I draw something and post it online. It's like a journal of my day in that specific city and the architecture, what happened. And so this is also a great experience for me to express my travels like that. I eventually will release these road art drawings
Okay.
in book formats.
Okay. Looking forward to that then. One last question about kind of this art subject, but Obviously, artificial intelligence has become one of the things that people talk about. And I had a discussion with a musician the other day about nobody expected AI to come for creative industries first. It's like, okay, we thought it was going to help with physical tasks and that kind of stuff. But now it seems to kind of venture into the creative world. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's definitely an amazing tool in the sense that, like, let's say for our video Quest for Nothing, it would have taken me 3,000 years to do that
Sure.
frame by frame. And so I'm okay with it as long as on our end, as long as we train the AI with my art and not somebody else's art, you know? And for video material, it's just amazing. Also, to have a bank of ideas for front covers or stuff like that, you know,
Right.
it's very useful. And but again, as long as it's my art being used, I can use it for Voivod, you know.
As a band, has the philosophy, and you are the only constant member from the beginning, so has the philosophy of the band always been to be open for changes, not only in music but in society, and kind of figuring out how to incorporate that into what you do?
Oh yeah, I mean from the start, I must say for the first couple of albums we were pretty much playing punk metal, thrash metal, you know, but I would say the big change was when we moved to Montreal and stayed together in the same apartment in 85 and started to go through everybody's vinyl collection, and then that's where we really started to add modern composer bits, you know, like from Shostakovich, Bartok, and you know, and also we listened to a lot of soundtracks, The Shining or Mad Max, or and we the music started to be more cinema oriented, and also got more into post-punk, Bauhaus, Killing Joke, and we were or industrial music, and we were never afraid to try to add new ingredients to the mix. And when we started recording in Berlin with Harris Jones, he was very well equipped with new technology, and so we explored that a lot, and especially on Dimension Hatras when we showed up in Berlin, and in the new music lab studio. He had a sampler, Akai sampler, and also Octapad from Roland, and electronic pads. And so I started on my end to explore a lot more. And so we tried to use the technology as much as we can. And back then it was scary because if we had to do special effects, backward music, or the engineer had to cut the tape. Always a very stressful, nerve-wracking moment, you know. And but these days it's just insane what you can do. So we try to use it and as much as we can. But also, the fun part is, like Chewie, not only is he's a great composer, but he's also a music teacher at college, and so he can write and compose charts for a string quartet like on The Wake, or a brass quintet like on the end of Dormancy EP, and people embrace it. Not only that, we are winning Junos for very intricate albums these days, so we're going to explore that open-minded side even more, you know. It gives us confidence.
That's an interesting point because I don't know how bands see this themselves, but did you, whenever you're writing, do you realize how technical certain things are, or is that, are you aware of that in a sense when you're just writing songs and trying to make an album?
Well, I must say that it has become more surgical during the pandemic when we wrote
Okay.
Synchro Anarchy and we had to do it while socially distancing. And I started to program drums on my computer for the demos, and it was a move forward in terms of syncing on Logic Pro and learning how to build an album without being in a rehearsal space because we didn't have access to a studio during lockdown. So, and now everything is more, we're moving ahead very fast because of that, because we can write on the road, which is great. And on the tour we just did with Testament in Europe, we started writing new material. And so during the Opeth tour last November and December in Europe, we started building the Morgoth Tales project. And yes, I think that now we have found a way to move forward, and it's very technical.
But did, I suppose because, as I mentioned earlier, this band has existed for 40 years. So do you need that change and that development to keep it interesting as well? To because.
Well, we need that way of working to push things forward. But I must say, it's really when we get into the studio at Radicard, where we record these days, it's really when we get together in a studio that it becomes Voivodian. You know, everything morphs into what will become a new album, because it's really where we figure things out, where it's working or not, and in terms of speed or structure. And but I must say that what I missed a bit when we did demos for Synchro Anarchy was to improvise music and record the improvisations. We quite often find new material from these improv sessions, that, and we record everything and then we listen to it. And it's something that you can't really create if you sit down and want to write music, you know. So it's good to have a good balance between these digital demos and the basic recording with an iPhone at the jam space. You know, it's good to mix both, really.
Right. And with that in mind then, because Tales of Morgoth is a selection of songs that you've previously released, but you re-recorded them. So when revisiting these songs then, has your mind already surpassed what was on the original recording and you're trying to do little new things and nuances that weren't on the original?
Well, I had to listen to the original material a lot, and then I was nervous when we I was on a bus to Radicard Studio outside of Montreal, and I was nervous because it represented a big challenge. And some of the songs like Nuage Fractal, I don't think we had ever played live, and we decided to go for a more obscure side of our catalog. So it's these were songs that were not in our DNA, so to speak, like tribal. I mean, you know, we wanted to avoid Tribal Convictions or Astronomie Dominée or The Unknown Knows, because it was featured on all the live releases we did lately. And so yeah, a big challenge. But what struck me the most was how the band progressed within a few years, mainly in the 80s, when we were rehearsing every night, touring, a world tour every year, and an album every year, and so on. And I got to realize that while re-recording the songs. And again, we built that project in November and December of last year while touring with Opeth. And so that's where we got the idea of covering all the lineups. And so we got I reached out to Eric and Eric Forrest and Jason Newsted. They got excited, and they appeared on the album, which was really, really cool. And it also it was a good occasion for them to jump on stage. Jason came on stage with us in Florida in May, and Eric came on stage at the Hellfest in June. And so yeah, it's great, great, and exciting project altogether. And But the main thrill was to re-record these songs and not to try to capture the youthful energy and all that, just to our representation of these songs with the lineup that's happening right now, the chemistry that we have, you know. It was so exciting, actually, that we even thought about doing a Morgoth Tales 2, but we have to release a new album of new material first.
No, but you mentioned something interesting, and one of the questions I thought of asking you was kind of what is one turning point for the band, or what was one specific important period. But you mentioned the 80s, and that there was a window of about 4 years where the band really progressed and really. Why was that? Why do you think that period particularly was so fruitful?
I think it's because we moved to Montreal together, lived together, built the concept together, the music, the visuals, everything. And like I said, doing one album and one world tour every year. We rehearsed every night from 83 to 89. So it's when I got a copy of the compilation by Noise, the Noise Years, 86, 88, 86, 88, from the first song of Roar to the last song of Dimension Hatras, it's almost not the same band, you know. It really made me realize how full throttle we were going, you know, and very dedicated and disciplined, and we had goals. And we achieved these goals, ended up being on a major label and all that. But I think that the band probably imploded in the early 90s during the making of Enter Rat, because we had been so dedicated together all the time and all that. So
You kind of
that's
burned out.
yeah, maybe we lost a bit of a focus. But in retrospect, we were still able, with all the obstacles and all that in the early 90s, and we were still able to release albums that are really appreciated now, like Enter Rat and The Outer Limits. Even though they went under the radar because of the grunge movement and all that, now people really love these albums. Whenever there is a vinyl re-release, it sells out in minutes. So
Yeah, and I wanted to ask about that because lately I've been speaking to a couple of bands who come from the Washington area in the US during that early or late 80s period when then in the 90s grunge came in and everything got railroaded in a way. How did you experience, and you've been in this for 4 decades, but how have you experienced those shifts in music where certain things are popular and then they aren't, and then they.
Well, we were lucky it didn't kill us, because we did have an alternative side, you know, and people still showed up at venues. And I mean, you know, we had a bit of a lower profile maybe in USA for a while, but what saved us was the festivals in Europe. And it really never died there, the metal scene, you know, and there were still huge festivals for heavy metal bands and all that. So, I would say that it by the mid 90s was a bit tough. We did a lot of touring, but you know, by it seems like a short period of time, because all of a sudden there was this movement with Meshuggah, Fear Factory, Machine Head, and you know,
Right.
and what we were doing around 96, 97, 95 kind of fit with that movement. So man, we've been surviving for 40 years as an underground band, and to me it's been a big roller coaster ride. But the end result of all this work and perseverance is that now we are more popular than ever, so it's quite a relief.
Especially in the difficult moments, what keeps you going? What keeps you on the right track?
It's the travels. As soon as we have a hiatus for some reason, I really miss going around the world playing Voivod music, meeting my old friends and new friends. And so I always went back to music because of that, you know. And I'm in a good situation where I can, when I'm at home, not touring or recording, I can do art for other bands. So I do that a lot. And but you know, I get antsy and miss the road every time we have to stop for a while, I must say.
Okay, so you're very happy that all the lockdowns are over, I can imagine.
Oh man, when we first started doing shows in 2020 with a lot of restrictions. Everybody had a mask on, and they were, but it was only in the province of Quebec. We couldn't get out. We couldn't even go to Ontario, you know.
Oh,
And
wow.
so everybody had to be 2 meters apart. And we first did online shows where we revisited classic albums because we wanted to get together. Even then, it was very strict restrictions. But it was in 2021 that actually, sorry, it was in 2022 that we were able to start touring internationally. It was at first we thought nobody would show up, but everybody showed up.
Everybody
And
was hungry for it. They've missed it.
oh yeah, and this year we have a super busy schedule for the 40th anniversary. So we're playing a lot of clubs and big festivals, and it's super exciting, you know. So yeah, we still have a lot of on our plate with in August shows in the Walk-In and the Helsinki
Right.
Fest, shows in clubs in Scandinavia, and in September a festival in Brazil, a lot of shows in the province of Quebec. In December we're playing with Meshuggah in Montreal. But I think that in the fall and in the winter we'll have time to write a new album.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting what you come up with then. And that's maybe another question that's good to ask you, because thematically or in terms of the concept, do you guys kind of sit together in a room, talk about stuff, and then kind of work out a theme, or is it just that you come up with kind of this concept and then you just try to make something out of it?
Well, it depends. Not long ago, we're trying to predict what would happen in the next 30 years or so. Now it's almost impossible to do so.
It's
We
so
have,
confusing at the
yeah,
moment.
right now we have just have to dig through what's popping online, and of course there is a lot of disinfo, but it's just that sci-fi has caught up with us, and in that aspect, synchronarchy is anchored in what's going on right now because it's super sci-fi. We were less inclined to, or Snake is probably less inclined to try to figure out what's going to happen in the future. There's a lot of material available in the
Sure.
present.
Well, but the what I find so interesting then, if you listen to a song like Killing Technology, which was probably written in 86 or something, then it's still very relevant in parts of its themes with today. So how do you make sense of that kind of precognition, or however you want to call it?
It's funny because when we did the Morgoth Tales recordings in January, what really jumped to my face was how much of a recurring nightmare it is, where we were talking about Chernobyl in 86, 87, and then
Sure.
we talked about Fukushima later, and now it's Zaporizhzhia, you know, and or ozone layer, acid rain, and then global warming, and so on and so on. So now, I mean, we've talked about AI taking control of high-tech weaponry and all that. So we're not so far, of course, yeah, it's we will always talk about the possibility of this, of the destruction of this planet. For a while in the 90s, I was doing interviews and people were telling me that I was retro talking about nuclear weapons, but it's back to the front line, and yeah, it's scary times, but I'm really a happy fellow and I enjoy life. I try not to be too stressed out and depressed about the nature of things, but I must say that art and drumming really, really helps me to it's like a presto.
Yeah, especially I can imagine that I have a piano here and a guitar, so I'm not a musician by any means, but I play and it clears my head a little bit. And then especially drumming, how physical it is, it's very cathartic, I imagine.
Oh yeah, it's always been some sort of levitation or trance for me when I play drums, where I evacuate a lot of anxiety, and it's really physical. It's an exercise and keeps me young. And yeah, man, I decided to take good care of myself when I saw Tommy Aldridge in '98. He was playing with White Snake, and I thought, if I want to be that guy in 25 years, I better take care of myself. And so I can still tour. We just did like 40 shows in 49 days or something like that, and we can still do it, man.
Oh, that's great. As a drummer, then, do you still, because you've been playing so long, do you still challenge yourself in terms of new techniques and everything? Is that the continual process?
Oh yeah, I try not to repeat the same patterns and same beats, and it has become increasingly difficult for sure because of
Sure.
the cat. We have a pretty good catalog. I try to I try to play differently sometimes on different parts, and it's great because we have jumped back into this fusion metal thing where it's progressive rock again. I feel at home because I really learned to play with hard rock and punk and metal, but also prog rock, and Robert Wyatt from Soft Machine, Terry Bozzio from Zappa, Christian Vander from Magma. I learned a lot from these drummers, so it's a great challenge, and but I feel at home, really.
That's great to hear. I have one last question. The Morgoth tales. I'm not a big. I've never read Lord of the Rings, but I know Morgoth is a word that's in Lord of
Yes.
the Rings. Was that the inspiration, or was there
Yes.
something else? Okay.
Yes. It's when I was creating my concept for my comic books in the 70s. And I saw the name Voivod in a Bram Stoker Dracula book. I thought it was a great name for a fantasy character. And Morgoth, I saw in the Tolkien book. And so I created this world. Well, the Voivod was this warrior guarding the Morgoth planet and making sure that high-tech weaponry is not getting out of control, and really an oppressor. He was not a hero. And yes, it's a mixture of Lord of the Rings and Dracula, but with the end of the 70s, the Cold War, the early 80s, movies like Tread and The Day After in the early 80s, and there was a documentary called If You Love This Planet, or something like that, from the National Film Board about nuclear stockpiles around the world. And so slowly but surely, my concept turned into more of a post-apocalyptic scenario. And so it was a good match with Voivod when we formed in 83, you know.
Yeah, that I think I love that. Yeah, as I mentioned in the beginning of this interview, that other side where it's not just music, there's this whole conceptual side to it as well. Yeah, I don't know how I should put this, but what do you hope people hear when they put on Morgoth Tales?
Oh, it's like a journey, really. And I mean, you can feel that from the early heavy metal of Condemned to the Gallows to the brand new song Morgoth Tales that we wrote specifically for this album. It's quite a How can I say? It's quite a journey, you know. And but yeah, it's like a voyage through different styles and experimentations. And yeah, I don't know. I think that the people will feel the progression of the band, and also, well, it's really great that we decided to cover the Eric Forrest and Jason Newsted years, because it was a great opportunity to refresh the set list. So this year's touring, people enjoy a lot, because these are songs we never really play live at all.
Well, that's very good news for the fans. So, yeah, good luck with playing live in the coming months, and then hopefully, as you mentioned, in winter or fall, you get some time to work on some new creative ideas. Michel May, I thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me, and see you on the road somewhere.